It certainly feels like fall today, and many of our trees have gotten the memo. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and today we're going to talk about fall color. What triggers the change? Why does it happen? When will it peak this year? And what conditions make for the most vibrant fall? Also, if you want brilliant color in your yard, what should you plant? We'd also love to hear what your favorite places are for a fall drive or a hike to make the most of the color. Mark Vitosh is a forester with the Department of Natural Resources, and Richard Giron is with Iowa State University Extension. We'll be talking trees and taking your calls about your yard or garden today. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. After the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Friday. That means it's Horticulture Day. And since it is now officially fall, and it certainly feels like fall today, we're going to talk about fall color. Mark Vitosh is a forester with the Department of Natural Resources in the Johnson County office, and Richard Giron is a horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. You can also get in on the conversation. Call us with your favorite spots for leaf viewing, whether you're going for a long fall drive or a nice fall hike. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll also be taking your yard and garden questions later on. Hello, Mark and Richard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here today. And Mark, let's start with you. What triggers the change of the leaves?
Well, actually, this kind of comes back to one of the topics that Dr. Jeff Isles brought up last week with the word senescence or senesce. You seemed so confused with that word last week, so I thought I'd bring it up again.
It's not a typical one that we use in conversation.
Well, actually, that has some impact. The thing you got to think about is here in Iowa, in the Midwest, in the East Coast, and kind of the central United States, we have a lot of deciduous plants, a lot of deciduous forests, and deciduous means those plants shed their leaves. And what basically triggers these leaves have, that means every year before winter, those leaves have to die. So they have to senesce, they have to drop off. And there's a lot of processes that go on in the leaf, and we'll talk about those a little bit. But basically what triggers is day length, the days get shorter, and the temperatures tend to get cooler. So that's the trigger mechanism for these plants to start senescing.
And why does it happen?
Well, again, it comes to as the reason it comes is basically for, let's take a deciduous tree, for example. It's producing food all summer. And before winter comes, it needs to start converting that food into storage material and getting that food back in to the plant. So it's triggered by the day length and the temperatures. So it needs to shut down all that material, all that food making material, and it needs to ship it back into the tree for storage before winter. So it needs that trigger and it needs to do it. So it basically empties the leaf of needed material that needs to get back into the trunk for storage in the wintertime. Well, so that's why it does.
You said you wanted to talk a little bit about the process that's going on there. What is happening?
Well, the process is the thing you need to think about. Let's think of a green leaf. The reason it's green is because these little pigments called chlorophyll. And chlorophyll are the reactor for photosynthesis. Trees get their energy from the sun, and the sunlight hits that chlorophyll, and the chlorophyll kind of gets excited. It causes a reaction in the leaf. Carbon dioxide comes up in through the plant, through little holes in the leaves. You get this all mixed up, and that's photosynthesis. And the tree produces basically sugar for energy, and that gets shipped back into the plant. It also gets water from the plant. Well, in the wintertime or in the fall, that chlorophyll actually starts to break down. And as that chlorophyll breaks down, that material gets shipped back into the leaf. Well, during the summer, there are other pigments, one called carotenes or carotenoids, and that's where we get our yellows and some of our oranges. Well, they're just sitting there tucked away all summer underneath the chlorophyll going, "Will you guys just break down and get out of my way?" Well, once that chlorophyll breaks down, then those other colors are unmasked. And that's part of the process is as the chlorophyll disappears, we start to unmask the colors that are already there. But there are other colors, the reds, some of the really sharp reds and purples, they're produced by another pigment that is not in the leaf during the summer. But in the fall, as the temperatures start to cool and as sugars are produced, they get stored up in the leaf, and you actually produce a pigment called anthocyanins, and those give us the purples and the reds. And depending on the temperatures and how much sunlight we get, that affects how brilliant and bright those colors. But basically, as part of senescence too, as all that stuff gets shipped back into the plant, the leaves do another thing. They call it abscise. They actually, the pipes get blocked up, and there's a little chemical barrier made, and that shuts everything off. And then at that point, the leaves die and the leaves fall off. So it's quite a process that happens.
Why do different trees turn different colors?
That actually has to do with the type of pigments that you see. So with things like, let's take, for example, cottonwood and green ash. They have yellow fall color. That's the carotenoids. They have that pigment, and they do not produce the anthocyanins. Sugar maples, for example, though, they have the carotenoids in them all year long, and the chlorophyll disappears, so you get some of the yellows. But they will also produce anthocyanins that give you some of those hues of that reddish and that orange and some of those other colors. So it depends on what pigments those leaves produce as far as what colors you're going to see.
You said that the conditions affect how vibrant those colors
Correct.
Are. What are the optimal conditions for a really vibrant fall?
Well, today is not optimal. The optimal is basically clear days that are very sunny, because that helps in the production of those anthocyanins. Those real bright, clear days helps with that production. Cloudy days like today are not good for fall color. And then cool nights. So we need clear days and cool nights. And actually, in the last couple of weeks, we've had some of those before we got the cloudy. So that probably is going to help with some of the production. But a lot of those anthocyanins get produced right now. So this next couple of weeks, if we get a lot of kind of gloomy days like today, it may not help the color.
When does color in Iowa usually peak?
It depends on what part of the state you're in, but it tends to start in the latter part of September, early October, up in the northern regions, and then kind of down in the south, kind of peaks in the latter part of October. And again, it really is all dependent. I mean, every year it changes, and I hate trying to predict because it's so unpredictable. And I actually did this show a couple years ago. Kind of made a prediction, and 2 days later that changed. I mean, because the weather changed. And
right.
So,
and a big wind can come and blow it all away.
Or a rain can, or if we get a freeze, a snap, basically the process goes. And if we get a really cold snap, that can just shut the process off right away, and then everything stops. Or you get a lot of, you may have a brilliant color scheme, but if you get a lot of windy days and a lot of rain, it shortens it by just causing the leaves to fall off more quickly than normal. So that weather can really, really vary. But I know I was looking on the web today, Wisconsin, they have places up there that are already starting to peak. But I've talked to our foresters up in northeast Iowa, and they're just starting to get little snippets of color and just kind of here and there. And in your local neighborhood, if you want to see color even today, the best place to go is in a parking lot.
Why is that?
Well, if you think about trees in parking lots, they're usually in very restricted areas, and they're under stress. So, and actually the last couple weeks, even in our floodplains and stuff, a lot of trees that have been under stress with all the water and stuff, they're all turning early. I was on my ride to work this morning on my bike, went through a parking lot, and it was beautiful white ash. Well, it's a little early for that, but because these trees are in restricted, they're shutting down earlier. And that's a response of the trees, too, and kind of their defense. If they're under stress, a lot of times they'll shut down a little earlier. Well, then you get fall color. So if you want to see a little bit of fall color, in most towns along the streets and in parking lots, you'll start to see the maple over here or the white ash over here, you'll start to see those inklings. But you see those because a lot of times those plants are in tougher sites. And the other thing is, too, even in your neighborhood, depending on where your maple tree is located and how much sun it gets versus your neighbor's, yours may turn a week earlier than theirs, and you can get a lot of variations. Even a street light might impact because of all the added light it may, as far as when that individual tree may turn color.
Because of all the stress that so many trees and other kinds of plants in Iowa have been under all summer, do you think that we'll have a less vibrant fall because of that?
Well, you're asking for a prediction, and I'm really hesitant to give you one.
Richard's
laughing over there.
But, I'll do it.
Well, here's the deal. Some of the reports I'm getting up north is they're seeing leaves kind of already fall off or kind of not look so good because we had a lot of leaf diseases this year. So that seems to be masking the potential color change too. So my initial guess would be it may not be as brilliant as we're used to because of some of these different stresses and stuff. But I've always been surprised that in some regions it may not be so good, but you may get valleys or areas where it's some of the best you've ever seen. So, but because of the weather, usually dry conditions tend to favor fall color unless they're really, really dry. Wet conditions don't tend to favor fall color as much.
All right.
Would
and
you
Richard,
agree, Richard?
What's your prediction?
I was going to agree that
good.
Because we had the wet weather, the spring and summer, we're seeing a lot of leaf diseases.
Yep.
And I think that is going to impact their color because they're going to drop a little bit early and they may not develop that nice color because of that disease. So I agree.
All right. Well, before we get to the break here, can each of you recommend a few of your favorite shrubs or trees that really give brilliant fall color? Richard, I'll start with you.
Okay, I'll start with a couple shrubs. Father Gila. It's not really known that well, but it's a nice shrub. It grows about 4 to 6 feet tall. It has kind of roundish flower clusters in the spring. They're white. But in the fall, you have colors of yellow, orange, and red. It's very nice. Father Gila. Also, Virginia Sweet Spire. You don't see that very much either. Virginia Sweet Spire. In the fall, it turns kind of reddish purple. Very, very showy. Also, Common Witch Hazel. Kind of a large shrub, small tree. It blooms actually in the fall, in late October, November. But in the fall, it also turns a nice clear yellow. Very pretty.
All right. Well, and actually, I'll wait until after the break to get Mark's recommendations. And you can join the conversation as well with your suggestions for maybe some of your favorite trees or shrubs or your favorite places to see fall color. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. My guests are Richard Giron and Mark Vitosh. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and my guests are Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Mark Vitosh from the state DNR. He's a forester in the Johnson County office, and we would love to hear from you. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about fall color, and Mark's about to make his picks for his favorite fall trees for your yard or landscape. And we also will be taking any of your questions about your yard and garden. 866-780-9100. So, Mark, now you've had plenty of time to think this over. What are some of your favorites?
Well, I have to go to educational quick, too. If you hear these species, it's very important before you select any tree for your yard, though, you evaluate your yard and make sure that what tree will do best. How much space do you have? How much light do you have? You see these different trees, you got to make sure they fit before you just go out and plant whatever. But some of my favorites, obviously, sugar maple has, and black maple. These are both native maples. They produce those nice yellows, some of those orange hues, just beautiful. Another one I really like is red oak. Tends to come later in the year. I mean, as the maples come, red oak will come. And another one is pin oak, but that's very site-specific. But it can have some really kind of rich purple, reddish color. Another one that's an ornamental is red maple. There's a lot of varieties of red maple out there, and I get calls every fall, well, what's that really rich red color in red maple? And then another one, this one doesn't perform every year, but it's native, and when it does perform, I love it, and it's white oak. It's, you know, oak is our state tree, and it kind of has a purple maroon color that I really enjoy.
And oaks change at a little bit different time than many
other trees,
and
that's the neat thing when you're out driving, too. You have to remember you can go out, and peak is such a confusing word because it may be the peak of the maples, but a week and a half later after the maples peak, you may start seeing vibrant reds and stuff of some of the oaks. Or you might have, before the oaks, you might see some nice yellows of ash or nice yellows of a lot of the hickories, depending on what areas and what timbers you're looking at. So there's a lot of variance. And a lot of times some of the neatest is having those nice yellows, even with spotty green in there still, sometimes makes some really neat visuals to look at. And those greens could be a lot of those oaks and stuff that just tend to come a little later. So they don't all just go, boom, it's time to show. Depending on tree species, they tend to kind of to lag.
And if people are looking for peak spots, the DNR does have a line that you can give a call
actually,
to.
Actually, our foresters call in to a nice lady named Candy at our state nursery every they call in every Monday, and she changes the report. But if they call 515-233-4110, they'll get a tape recording, and she has a very nice voice, and she'll tell you about the fall color throughout the state by regions, what's peaking. And if you call right now, she'll tell you that the only thing that's really showing up in northeast Iowa are the sumacs and the Virginia creeper, which is a vine. Sumacs are a shrub. Those are, you're seeing some purples and some reds from them. But most of the others, other than a spotty white ash that we talked about or a sugar maple in town or a parking lot, there's a lot of green out there. And they're also reporting in northeast that there's seems to be some relationship to the fungi and different problems this year that might be masking some of the color. But that'll give you, every Monday, I'll give you an update. And this happens really quick. I mean, you know, in another month, we'll be talking about pumpkins and everything else, and there may not be much fall color left. Or if the weather kind of stays warm and dry, it may stretch it out longer than normal.
And that number is 515-233-4110. We'll put that up on our Twitter at IPR Talk and also on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, as well. And you can find that on the web?
Yeah, if you go to iowadnr.gov and then click on stateforest/forest, and then go to a link, fall color, you can see the written comments. She basically takes those comments and puts them on a narrative sheet, and you can see where those fall colors are peaking.
All right. And we'd love to hear from you at 866-780-9100. We have Kim on the line from Lucas. Hello, Kim.
Yeah, hi. Well, I guess my first suggestion was, and it'll be like he was saying, about a month yet, and check the recording, but Stevens Forest here, which is adjoining my farm, so I get to look at it every morning, usually has real nice fall colors and later in October. And then I had a question. I believe I've heard before that to regenerate or refresh spirea, this is bridal wreath spirea, it's best to cut them down. And I guess I was wondering what the best time to cut them is and what the height should be.
Well, as far as pruning them, they can be pruned. Probably the best time is in the spring. Now, you have two options as far as timing. You could prune those in late March, early April before they leaf out. But if you do so, they obviously won't bloom that year. So if the bloom is not important, then I would probably do it then. If the bloom is important, wait till they bloom and then prune them immediately after blooming. And that's fine, too. So you have the choice, either early in the spring or after bloom. And as far as size, ideally you would like to take out some of the old growth near the ground level and leave the rest of the growth. That's the ideal situation. You typically don't want to give them a haircut where you cut them off at a specific height. That typically isn't best for the plant. So ideally you would go out there and prune them off and take out some of the old growth. Now, if these are really, really old plants, what you may want to do is simply go out there in late March, early April, and actually cut them back to the ground. And they'll come back. It'll take a few years before they get to full size and bloom again, but you can do that if they're really old plants that need major renovation.
All right. Kim, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call and for your suggestion today. And next up we have Shirley in Monticello. And Shirley, your question would probably be better for Donald Lewis, our entomologist who comes on the program every once in a while, but he's not here today, so let's see how Richard and Mark can do with this one. What's your question, Shirley?
My question, Charity, is yesterday I happened to see a caterpillar out there, and you know they're coming to light now with their pretty oranges, too, as well as the maples. And this particular one, I happened to throw my garbage in the dumpster, and I found this caterpillar on the side, and he had all these beautiful orange colors. Now, what does that mean we're going to have an early winter when we see these caterpillars coming out like this?
I think I've heard Donald answer that question in the past. Typically, I don't think you can base any type of prediction based on what they look like, that they really aren't very good predictors as such. So it's a very common kind of folktale, but it really there's no scientific basis for it. So you really can't.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
One guy came along and he saw it and he said, yeah, I believe in that. He said, enough is black. That'd be, we're going to have a hard winter. And that's what he told me. Really?
Well, maybe we'll have to wait and see, and we can check back in the spring.
Okay, Nat King Cole said it all. The autumn leaves here are starting to turn on Cedar Street. The maples are starting to turn red.
Oh, nice.
They're beautiful. They're starting. And Delhi is going to be such a beautiful scenery area to go through. And people who are gardeners and horticultural lovers will just love to see the Delhi area. And we need people up here because of our dam breaking down, you know.
Okay. Well, okay. I hope a lot of people take that to heart. Thanks a lot, Shirley.
Hey, have a good day.
You too. Next up, we have Randy in Iowa County. Hello, Randy.
Hi there. You know, if you look at the pear leaves, they have a little bit of a color to them. And then as long as there's still pears on the tree, that's kind of pretty, too. And then like one of the guys was saying, the hickories, you know, then you have hickory nuts if you like cracking hickory nuts. So I guess, you know, people want to plant trees that have a dual purpose. Go for the ideas. I mean, everybody's liking pears at markets. And what do you think?
Well, if you plant a fruit tree, you have the pretty flowers in the spring. Then you have the edible fruit. And then some of them do produce some nice fall foliage. So they are quite nice for the landscape.
All right. Do you have a favorite, Richard?
As far as a fruit tree, probably a tart cherry.
I have to throw a plant in here, too, just because he spoke last week. Actually, the crab apples have a lot of – there's a lot of fruit on some of the crab apples that has some real vibrant reds, and there's even one called there's a yellow one. Is it gumdrop or something like that, Richard, or yellow something? But anyway, even crab apples can have some fall characteristic from that fruit that can be very vibrant once those leaves fall. So I have to say that for Dr. Isles.
Okay. Well, and it's nice if you want to attract a wildlife to your yard, that can be nice as well for them.
Well, our point is there's a lot of different plants that can provide a lot of different things at different times of year.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we have Karen in Lakeview. Hello, Karen.
Hi there.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I've had some trouble in the last couple of days. There was a small red maple in the backyard that sort of tipped over last month with a strong wind. It had one real large branch, and that came off and ripped open some of the trunk. Last night, the top half came down. So what could I use as a good replacement for the wind for a shade tree?
How much space do you have, Karen?
It's a big lot.
Well,
the deck is there. It's a very small house.
Okay. There's, again, this kind of comes back that the real critical thing is to look at your space, what the soil drainage is, how much light, and then you can start looking. But if you have good space, there's a number of different types of trees that might work If you don't mind acorns, I love red oak as a shade tree. I really do. It has a nice shape. It has nice form. And actually, for an oak, it grows pretty well. Another one some people like and some people don't, but is some of the honey locusts. There's some nice varieties that will also provide some filtering of light through if you like to have some grass underneath those areas too. And then we mentioned the sugar maple. The key on all these, though, too, as you develop these young trees, and we've talked about this in other times, is you can develop nice, strong leaders on these trees and do some pruning as they develop to try to reduce potential damage from storms like you got on your red maple. A lot of times the damage I see, if we had pruned them 10, 15 years before and eliminated some of those weak branches, sometimes we can eliminate those potential problems later on.
And how can Karen identify the weak branches?
Well, a lot of times weak branches are real narrow. They're like a V shape, and a lot of times you'll have double leaders coming up, so you'll have two main stems coming up, and their connection's more V. There should be more of a U shape, or actually our branches, our side branches, should also be more closer to a 90-degree angle. The wider those branches are, the stronger they are. Actually, the narrower they are, you think they would be stronger, they're actually weaker. So if there's seams between those connections, a lot of times that's a weaker connected branch. There's a great publication from Iowa State called Pruning Trees and Shrubs that they can find on the web that has nice pictures of good unions and bad branch connections and what to look for and how to prune those out correctly. And again, when you first plant a tree, first couple years, you want to leave as much leaf material on as possible, and you don't want to over-prune. You can actually damage that tree. But as that tree develops, you can start to prune some of those weak connections and weak branches and really make a stronger tree for 30, 40 years down the road.
All right, Karen, good luck. I'm sorry to hear about your maple tree.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call. You can join us at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we got this comment from Jess on Twitter. She says she likes to drive the Great River Road and hike by the Effigy Mounds National Monument and also hike in the Yellow River State Forest to enjoy the fall.
And those were all on my list to talk about if someone didn't mention them.
Right.
And we have...
And Pikes Peak, too.
Yep. And we have other state forests. We have a forest in the Luss Hills out in western Iowa, and we have Shimmick State Forest down in southeast near Stevens Forest. So there's a lot of nice places. And there's a lot of beautiful state parks, Geode State Park down in southeast by Burlington. My wife and I love Palisades Kempler. When we were in high school and dating, we used to go to Palisades Kempler State Park near Mount Vernon and look at the maples, very beautiful area. And Lake McBride State Park near Iowa City is another place. And then we have a bunch of Corps of Engineer reservoirs. We have Red Rock. We have Sailorville over by Des Moines. We have Corville Reservoir near Iowa City. So there's just many different places. And also Shirley mentioned, like Delhi and stuff, some of our communities have really beautiful, I know Mount Vernon has a lot of maples. There's a lot of older communities that have good fall color. Just make sure when you drive through a town that whoever's driving is paying attention to the road and not to the fall color. So we don't want to cause any accidents. But some of our towns have some beautiful, vibrant colors. And
I thought you were going to say you should at least stop and buy a cup of coffee.
Well, yes, stop, get some gas, go to the local Casey's or wherever it may be and help. And that actually does help our economy. It's amazing. We've talked about this, about the forest impacts, and fall color does, you know, people stay overnight and stuff like that or eat at a local restaurant. But some of these communities have some really, especially get up in northeast Iowa, you'll get up on top of the hill and look down in the valley of some of these communities, and it's just some beautiful fall color.
Well, and that's, when you mentioned Pikes Peak, that's one of the things that really helps if you can get above, or with the reservoirs, if you can get that kind of perspective from an open area, from the water. I suppose a parking lot works that way, too.
Right, and there's a park called Eagle Point Park in Clinton that has some beautiful views when you get into the park, and they actually have some vistas that you can stand on top of, and they have the viewing binocular things you can look at and stuff, too, and look down over the river and look down through the valley. Some of those views are great.
And, Richard, are there any that Mark didn't mention that you had on your list?
They were on my list, but I was born and raised in western Iowa, so I'll make a pitch for just a drive to the Luss Hills in western Iowa. You basically have cottonwoods and some greenage, so it's basically yellows, some brownish oranges and that type of thing, but just a drive in the Lus Hills, up and down the hills and valleys.
And to support that, another thing that adds to that out in western Iowa is a lot of those hills have beautiful bluestem, which has kind of a purple tinge to it and a hue to it, too, that kind of molds with that yellow that provides some beautiful scenery also.
Well, and Stone Park in Sioux City is a wonderful place to
go. Our Preparation Canyon, too.
Right. That was on my list, too. Good job. All right.
If you have anything that Mark and Richard didn't mention that you'd like to suggest, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dubuque is one that hasn't come up, but Dubuque is a wonderful place to go and see fall color.
I'm trying to envelope that in that Northeast Iowa thing. But yes, you're right.
You won't let me win that one. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm here with Mark Vitosh, a forester with the Department of Natural Resources, and Richard Giron, a horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. And you are welcome to join our conversation. That number again, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me are Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Mark Vitosh, a forester with the Department of Natural Resources, and we are taking your calls about your yard or garden. We also have been talking a lot about fall color today, so if you have a favorite spot to view fall color or a favorite tree or shrub you'd like to mention, do call us, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next we have Donna from Cascade. Hello, Donna.
Hi.
What would you like to talk about?
Actually, I have a question. I grew up in Ohio, and so I grew up to love the buckeye tree. Not many people here in Iowa know what the buckeye tree is or what it looks like, but it has beautiful flowers that kind of come in clusters shaped like triangles. And they have a nut that is poisonous to humans, but the squirrels love them. And I'm wondering, if I ever went to Ohio and brought a sapling here, how would the buckeye tree grow here, or is that not a good idea to introduce that here? I haven't seen any around here.
Actually, Ohio buckeye, Donna, is native to southern Iowa.
Really?
So it is native to Iowa, and I'm not sure if the native range clear gets that far, but it should grow in Cascade and do fine. So you could grow it, but you might be better off to get a source here in Iowa just because it may be a little more adaptable. Ohio and Cascade, wherever you're at, probably pretty similar. But Ohio buckeye will definitely grow. The one thing we see sometimes in Iowa is with our hotter summers, sometimes the buckeye will do what we call scorch. The edges will turn kind of a brown and stuff when we get those really hot kind of windy days in early to mid-August. But in general, I know up north I've seen some really large buckeyes in places, so it should be fairly adaptable up there. Anything to add to that, Richard?
Yeah, in central and western Iowa, it tends to get a little bit too hot and dry for it, and so it does tend to scorch. But as you go farther east, growing conditions do improve, so it should do better in eastern Iowa.
Okay. Wonderful. I never knew that they were here in Iowa. I haven't seen one.
So. Well, like I say, they're more common, but you go down in our woodlands in southern Iowa and you can actually find native buckeye, and it just doesn't push up as much normally, but you can grow it up in your area.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Donna.
Thank you.
That makes me think of a question about nursery stock, Mark, because obviously we have these pests who are moving across the nation, like the emerald ash borer. And my husband and I were just looking for a specific kind of apple tree, and we found online that we could get one from Wisconsin. We couldn't find that kind of apple tree in Iowa. But is there a problem with ordering trees or nursery stock sent from other states that we need to be wary of?
Yeah, and all states have inspection groups with Iowa or with their Department of Ag and others where they inspect plants, and there are rules as far as shipping and stuff like that. And before they ship them, there's always that concern that, you know, one example is like with a lot of evergreens, there's an insect called the gypsy moth, which we've talked about on this program before, that's in the eastern United States and moving this way. And we have found it in Iowa for years, but it's never really established yet. But our numbers this year seem to be getting higher. It likes to lay its eggs on any plant, its egg masses, so it can crawl up into a small evergreen that maybe comes from Michigan, and that gets shipped here. One thing that they try to do up there is they try to inspect those plants before they're shipped. So, there always is that concern, and that's one reason why I was pushing Donna to maybe look for a source in Iowa. But a lot of our nurseries, if they can't grow stuff here, they'll get stuff from Minnesota and other places like that. But all states have programs that they require that that material is inspected before it's shipped, and other states require that it's inspected before it's shipped to them. So there is, but things can fall through the cracks.
Right. But there's a little bit of protection.
There is a system there that's trying to help us protect, but it can be difficult at times.
All right.
It's a great question.
Fred is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Fred.
Hello.
Hi Fred. What's your question?
Just two quick questions. But first of all, I'll just make a comment about this time of year. I'm a fairly newcomer to Iowa. I grew up and was raised in northern Vermont.
Oh.
Extremely familiar with all the fun fall colors, and made me laugh when you were talking and recommending that people go around to towns and, you know, maybe stay at a hotel or have breakfast or lunch. And we used to, we called them leaf peepers up in Vermont. Here comes the peepers again. We'd get them from New York and New Jersey, from all over, and the peepers would just snarl traffic up, but it was great for the economy. Anyway, and like I said, I'm a newcomer here, and I was kind of like, Des Moines, isn't that like really flat in cornfields? I'm like, oh my God. And I just love it here. I mean, it's really, really nice. I'm fortunate to live in an area of Des Moines, southwest Des Moines. It's rolling hills, tons of oaks, maples, flowering pear trees. I swear I'm in Vermont. So anyway, it's a beautiful state here. I wish I could get to see more of it. But my question is, I'm not a big gardener. I don't have time, but I'm infatuated with the grasses that are here, these ornamental grasses, and I've been noticing them on you know, the sides of the roads and people's landscaping, of course, too. But a lot of the wild stuff, the grasses, and right now there seems to be like a native miniature sunflower that is growing at like 6-7 feet high. What I want to do is, I guess, poach some of these plants that aren't on private property and move them to my house, to my yard, just a few of them. Can I plant those things in the fall? And if so, should I trim them? I see a lot of people cut their ornamental grasses. They cut them very, very low in the fall. So that's my question. Is it okay to deal with those ornamental grasses and stuff?
Okay, Richard.
Well, as far as the ornamental grasses, you can propagate those fairly easily by just digging them up and dividing them. And the best time to do that would be typically in early spring, just as new foliage begins to emerge from the ground. So at that point, you could cut them back as far as cutting back all that dead debris and then dig them up and then take maybe a spade or a shovel and simply divide that clump into sections. So that's the best time to do it. Most of your ornamental grasses are divided fairly easily. They take that very nicely. As far as some of the native plant materials, you can typically buy them, either seed or plants, from different nurseries or garden centers. So they are available, too, where you don't really have to go out and dig things up in
nature.
And we
encourage you not to poach.
Right, right.
Yes.
So, but you can go and buy native grasses, wildflowers, either seeds, plants, various seed mixtures. They are available. For example, in Western Iowa, there's a company called Ion Exchange, and they specialize in native plant materials, and I think they sell both seeds and plants.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Fred. And we've got next up Kurt in Manchester. Hello, Kurt.
I'm here.
Hi. What's your question?
I heard you mention some leaf disease earlier this year. It seems like a number of the trees around my house, particularly we have some Japanese lilacs, that the leaves are affected. Is this just a seasonal, occasional seasonal problem, or is it something that's actually going to affect the health of the trees in the future?
Well, usually, Kurt, it's most of it's been related to the kind of the cool, moist weather we had in the spring and early summer. Like the crab apples got really hard. We had anthracnose on the sycamores. We had anthracnose on the oaks. But we're just having, you know, like on lilacs, we have a problem called powdery mildew a lot of times it's associated with, where they'll turn kind of whitish brown and kind of start curling up. So most of this is seasonal. I mean, it's always important in your own plants in your yard to watch them and stuff. And if you see something really severe, you can always take leaf samples, take them into your local county extension office, and for a small fee, they can take them over or send them over to Iowa State and confirm what's there just to make sure it's something that's seasonal. Or a lot of times you can take pictures and send those over to the Iowa State Disease Clinic, and they can look at them and see what it might be. But, yeah, we just had this year, because of the weather conditions, a lot of some of the common diseases that usually show up, but they don't show up a lot just if the weather conditions aren't there.
Okay, could you take one more quick one?
Very quickly.
Okay, I have Wigelias, several of them in the yard,
mm-hmm.
and I've noticed this year was really a bad year for them. They didn't come back, a lot of dead branches in it, and they're not that old, probably 4 or 5 years at the most. Was that a common problem this year too, or do I need to look at something else?
Well, they are prone to that, especially in central and northern Iowa. If we have a really cold winter, we tend to see quite a bit of dieback on them. It doesn't destroy the plant, but it does destroy individual stems. So you can expect some dieback when we have extremely cold winters.
And what's the best time to trim the dead out of them, in the spring?
In the spring. Once you see certain areas are not leafing out, you can safely assume they're dead, and then at that point cut them back.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Kurt. And we have another Kurt on the line, this one in Coralville. Hello.
Hello. I have a question about a pin oak in my front yard. I moved into a condo that was being newly built 5 years ago, and a pin oak was planted next to the driveway. The first 2 years it did very nicely. The last 2 or 3 years it seems like it's turned yellow, and it has that iron deficiency look to it, and the leaves look all scorched right now. The landscape guy that does our work out here was thinking that that could be moved by it's about 20 feet tall, could be moved by a tree spade and put someplace else, and it might do well. And he was thinking that underneath that tree there could have been, when there was construction done, a limestone used around the foundation, and it was just dumped there, and maybe that tree is sitting on top of it. We tried to correct the soil around with iron and sulfur for 2 years now, and it's not done anything. Is there, if we get rid of this tree or move it, what could be planted in its place? Would a maple, for example, work there?
Well, some of the maples, like red maple, are sensitive to pH, too. I guess the one thing is, if I was to move that tree, I would take a soil sample and see what the pH is. And if the pH is above 7, 7.2, 7.3, or sometimes I see 7.5 in some of those soils, even maple, like red maple, it has a problem with a certain nutrient called manganese, which is related, again, to the pH level. So if that pH level is high, there's a number of species like pin oak, swamp oak, and the red maples that are going to have a tough time. There are other species that, you know, I mentioned honey locust earlier, that's kind of tolerant to some different tougher sites. Ginkgo is another one that tends to be tougher in some of those areas. So there are some trees, if the pH is a little higher, that you might be able to replace in that case.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Kurt. And our talk about places to see fall color have brought out some people who are very pro their favorite sites. So Becky sent us an email and she says, you just mentioned Eagle Point Park in Clinton, but there is an even better one. I'm sure that's debatable, but Eagle Point Park in Dubuque.
There you go.
This is a great place to view fall foliage because you can see the trees change in three states at once, Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. And she says that she enjoys the program. So
excellent.
And we also got an email from Beth who says that she was happy to hear us talk about Pikes Peak State Park. So many people forget about it. I didn't know until I visited a museum in Colorado Springs, but Zebulon Pike didn't even discover Pikes Peak in Colorado. He died before he could make it up the mountain. They just named it after him. So Pikes Peak of Iowa is really the one and only original real Pikes Peak. And she also wanted to say that ours is much more beautiful and breathtaking than that one anyway.
And if folks want to find out more specifics about some of the state parks, if they go to our iowadnr.gov and click on our parks, they can get descriptions of each parks. Some, a lot of these parks have cabins, too, where people can stay for fairly low rates. So there's a lot of opportunities out there.
And Joe from Bluegrass says that Wildcat Den State Park is vibrant gold, and he loves to go to that one. He wants
that's
to know,
near Muscatine.
All right, what kind of maple tree turns that color of gold?
Well, if they're actually in there in Wildcat Den, a lot of that is sugar maple. And sugar maple will have some vibrant yellow and some gold. And it also, there's probably a little bit of black maple in there, too. So sometimes those sugars will not get those orange hues, and they'll be more of a yellow.
Oh.
So that I know that for specific, because I've been in Wildcat Den, there's a lot of sugar maple in there.
All right, and we have time for one more question. Here is David from Iowa City. Hello, David.
Hello.
What's your question?
Well, I have this summer put in a rain barrel and caught rain that I've been using to water houseplants. And now I'm beginning to wonder, I've seen some signs in plants that maybe there's something coming off this roof into the rainwater that the plant doesn't like, particularly cyclamen. The leaves curl on the edges of it. And I'm just wondering if that's a possibility and how I might go about having the water checked. Or
well, it shouldn't be a problem, I wouldn't think, as far as using that to water the plants. I guess one way to maybe check that would be maybe just to use maybe, let's say, distilled water for maybe a few weeks and see if the plant improves. And if it doesn't, then it's probably not the water itself. There must be something else going on. But you could try that, where you could try some other water source, like water that you buy at the store, pasteurized water or whatever, and use that.
All right. Well, good luck with your experiment, David, and let us know if you find that there's something about your rain barrel water that isn't working out. And Richard Giron, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron is a horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. Mark Vitosh, thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
Mark Vitosh is a forester with the Department of Natural Resources in the Johnson County office. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Russell Mansky in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org whenever you like. We also welcome your comments, your questions, your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can find us on Twitter at IPRTalk. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for Iowa Public Radio, and we will be putting up the fall line or fall color line number up on Facebook and Twitter, so you can find it there if you missed it on the show. Our theme was composed and performed by Dan Knight. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on Talk of Iowa, the director of the Iowa Writers Workshop, Land Samantha Chang, will talk about her new novel, All Is Forgotten, Nothing Is Lost. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.